Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of True Crime on Easy Street. We're back again this week, and my name's Katie Givens. I'm not a lawyer.
Scott Wright, mediocre journalist.
Kelly Turner, not a doctor.
Careful, you're going to punch yourself in the face with that mic.
I pulled that a little too quick, didn't I? Bam!
Got yourself right on the lip.
I did. It's a good thing it's soft here.
Yeah.
We're discombobulated today because Katie has rearranged the damn studio.
Yeah. I like it, though.
Now I'm staring out the window at nothing.
I'm going to get some blinds.
You know what you can see? You can see the beautiful Easy Street restaurant, bar, and performance hall.
Yeah, but just a corner
of it. Our main sponsor.
Yeah, but not enough to make out what it is if I didn't already know.
Oh, yeah, no, sorry. Sorry, Scott.
If I can get Shane Givens to hang some blinds,
he will. You know what he's going to do on the side of that building? If he knew that you were saying this, mm-hmm. he's going to hang a picture of someone shooting you a bird, probably him.
That sounds like exactly something.
So that
he
you
would
could
do.
See that every week when yeah. you record. So
blinds,
speaking
please.
Of yeah, speaking of Easy Street Restaurant Bar and Performance Hall, what's going on this week?
This week,
see how you did that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. very nice segue.
I know. I like to highlight our main sponsor.
Friday night we've got Wayward Sons 8. And Ooh. Saturday night we've got Country Case, so it's gonna be.
Are those two different types of entertainment? Are they similar?
I'll take a stab at what Country Case sings.
Yeah, yeah. Me too.
And I think Wayward Sons 8's more of like a Southern rock situation.
Yeah, that
okay,
sounds
so
like,
a little bit different.
Yeah, that Wayward Son does that Kansas. That,
oh yeah.
Yeah. Right. I'm assuming that's where
I'm not sure from. That they've played before though. Okay. Now that I'm thinking off the top of my head,
we've so got brand new, brand new entertainment.
Sweet.
Yeah, you can come by. I mean, I'm sure there's a football game this Friday, but we'll be there long after the football game's over.
Yeah, it's football season. That's officially begins
mm-hmm.
this mm-hmm. week here yep. in Cherokee County and all over the state of Alabama.
Mm-hmm. It does. So, you know, my favorite thing that you guys have on Easy Street at the restaurant there, when you guys do the Jimmy's smoked wings.
Mm-hmm. Jimmy needs to get back there and get some wings.
When was
going.
That done most recently? I don't.
You know I don't remember, but I.
Shane
I have
usually
to come
calls
get it
KT.
Every time.
Yeah, he calls KT because.
Oh, okay.
And that's
their
favorite.
You know they're bottling Jimmy's barbecue sauce now next door.
No.
I got one already. I haven't opened it yet. I'm going to wait until tonight. I've got some ribs I'm going to cook and then.
So run, don't walk.
Yeah.
Because when that information gets out.
I'm telling you, that stuff's good.
It's even it got Jimmy's delicious. Face on the bottle.
Yeah, we put Jimmy's face on the label.
As it should be.
Yeah.
It's his sauce.
I thought so.
Does Shane even know the recipe?
He has finally been given.
Does he? Because for years and years, Jimmy wouldn't tell him what it was. Yep.
No, it's Jimmy's sauce.
Mm-hmm. I mean, Jimmy still makes it for the restaurant now, but Shane has been given privy to the recipe.
For those of you who don't know, Jimmy is Shane's father.
Correct.
So that's who we keep talking about.
Yes, my father.
The master chef
yes.
Next door at Easy Street.
Yeah. But I'm serious. The next time the smoked wings are on the menu, come get them.
Somebody, okay.
They're delicious.
Are you telling me or are you telling everybody?
I'm telling everybody.
Well, don't tell everybody. They'll run out.
Well, I won't have to worry about it because I'll get here early.
It's kind of one of those things you want to get day of.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, this is true, I guess.
Exactly.
All right.
And Jimmy does a bunch of other stuff very well. You know, it's not just the wings, but those just happen to be my favorite.
Because
they
are an
excellent chef. And that barbecue sauce, that will be on my shelf.
Mm-hmm.
Most
you better
definitely.
Hurry. They only made 100 of them.
Okay. Yeah. That's why I said run, don't walk.
Yeah. The first batch, at least, was 100.
All right. So this week, I'm going to pat myself on the back a little bit.
Oh, boy.
Even though I didn't do anything other than suggest this case. But
did
I'm not going to. Yeah, I did.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to pat myself on the back too much.
Yeah. What if I screw it up?
Well, no, you won't. You always do a great job. But Stacy Smith, who was our very first guest on the show back in season one, reminded me of this case. We had talked about this before, and she said, we were on the boat one day, and she said, do you remember, because we were over in the area in the water.
I was going to ask if you were there.
Okay. Yes. And she said, do you remember us talking about this? And she started mentioning, and I said, holy cow. I just snapped my fingers. You didn't hear that. But anyways, so I immediately got on my phone, and I texted you guys an article related to this case. Mm-hmm. And I said, can we do this?
Yeah.
And you said, on it.
I said, I'll see what I can find out. Mm-hmm. My mediocre journalism skills.
Now, did you go get pictures?
Yes.
Okay.
I went to Yellow Creek Fish Camp in person yesterday. Probably the first time I'd been in that store in 25 years.
Oh, wow.
It looks exactly the same.
Oh, my goodness.
I think all the counters are the same. There's mm-hmm. there's a sign on the door that says, please don't steal our cats.
Oh,
really?
I know. Who has that problem? Apparently the folks at Yellow Creek Fish Camp.
No other individual has that problem here.
Yeah, there's plenty of cats everywhere else mm-hmm. in this county.
You go to McDonald's here in town, there's the McKittens.
Yeah. Yes.
There's six of them.
Are there that many?
Mm-hmm. They're living their best life.
Not people want to try to busy intersection.
People want to try to get them, and I'm like, don't break up the family. They're living their best life.
Yeah,
yeah.
I mean, Scott, how many? You have what? Three cats?
Mm-hmm.
I have one.
I only have one on purpose.
Well, I was about to say the last one you got wasn't it? It was a rescue from Jex on the
lake.
It
was a rescue. It was living under.
Right.
It was living under one of the storage buildings at Jex on the lake, and
somehow we mention it every week, and they're not a sponsor.
I know, that's like our running joke, it and is. Katie did it this time.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it wasn't me, and it wasn't you.
I mean, she's starting the sentence, and I'm like, really, we're going to do this again?
Uh-huh. Again, once again.
All right, well, let's just make that our running joke. Let's somehow mention Jex on the lake every show.
That is funny.
Jake's been on the show a couple of times, yeah. So, you know.
He'll love it.
And let's see, we've had Julie on.
Mm-hmm.
That's it, right? We haven't had Claudia or Jacob. They're nope. kids on.
We discussed having Claudia on at one time, and then she fiddled around and graduated and got a job and moved off.
Now she lives somewhere else.
Yeah.
She's living her best life, too, though.
Yeah,
good
sure.
for her.
Yeah, she's got a backyard, she said.
Jacob mentioned wanting to be on, and then it never got any further than him just mentioning it.
Well, he's more of an idea guy.
We love the Graves. All right, so here we go. Take it away, Scott.
Can we talk about something else first?
Okay, what?
I was asking Katie, we were here at noon, so we had a few minutes to talk before you got here.
You had exactly 4 minutes
So during this 4 minute time span between when we were supposed to start and when you walked in the door, we were discussing something that I watched on Netflix over the weekend.
What'd you watch?
The Depp the Herd documentary series.
Watched it last night.
Yeah. I watched all three of them yesterday.
What do you think about that?
Guess who hasn't seen it yet?
Katie.
I know, but it is on my list. It is on my list.
It's
I enjoyed it more than I thought.
I thought they did a great job.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
What do you think? What are your thoughts after watching that? It's hard, isn't it?
I think.
Ooh, do you think the jury got it right?
I don't think so.
What do you think?
I think he probably did it.
I think he was violent?
I think he was abusive to her.
Like, even the sexual assault and everything?
Maybe. Mm. I mean, everybody said, oh, she was just acting because that's her profession. So it's easy mm-hmm. for her to, you know, feign tears or sadness or fear or whatever. But I believed her.
So let me tell you who I didn't believe.
Okay.
I did not believe the dude that they called in and put on the stand that was supposedly on the plane with
them. Oh, yeah.
That dude.
Yeah, what a lying bag of...
And at one point in time, Johnny Depp just starts looking down because he's like, yeah, this is falling
flat.
Yeah,
he's trying not to laugh because my buddy is up there like, blatantly lying for me.
And he is... really not doing a good job.
Yeah. No, I don't think he believed himself.
But I do think that they were both violent, and I think it was volatile at times, and I think they're probably both to blame. But I think she was probably wrong to do the article.
Yeah.
And call herself the face of abuse and wrong to say that she was going to donate all that divorce money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that didn't look good.
No. And the fact that there was one other thing that she was obviously lying about.
Yeah, and that's
kind of... they called her out on, and I can't remember what it was just now. So I think...
if you can prove she's lying about one thing.
And that's what they did.
And that's what they did.
He had a great defense team.
Yeah.
I'm sure that lady got a promotion.
She brought up the Kate Moss. She brought up the name Kate Moss.
And
so that opened up the opportunity for the defense, or I'm sorry, for the prosecution, I guess, to call Kate Moss as a witness.
Yes. Oh. And we also learned,
I didn't watch any of that when it was happening.
The makeup company, they are the ones who posted on social media and
got
said,
involved.
We didn't produce this.
Yeah, that was the next year before we
So it wasn't actually the lawyers that... that brought that to light. That was a total social media thing. I think this documentary did an excellent job at showing how social media will make something look completely skewed.
I mean, that was the overriding focus of the documentary, obviously, was to show you how distorted everything can become when you get social media as the filter that it all goes through.
And then you get the opportunity to just hear what the jury heard. And I think if I was on that jury, I would have had a very difficult time. I can understand why, you know, she actually got a yes vote and he had to pay her $2
million. That's right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I can actually see why they did that. I'm actually very surprised they gave him all yeses. But they did not prove that there was really no really good evidence that he was
physically abusive.
Physically abusive.
Yeah.
But no, there was no evidence.
And that wasn't, because the trial was a defamation trial. So you had to prove that she said
she
false statements
him.
Of fact.
Yeah, and they did.
That he was an abuser.
I think they did. Because there was nothing to show that the only eyewitness to any of the, quote, abuse was her sister. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Defamation case is hard to win, too.
And for a man to win it? Wow.
Yeah.
And then Amber gets this letter from abuse survivors, and it's a harsh one.
Yeah. It's they threw her under the bus.
Oh, they were angry.
We don't believe you. You've made us all look bad.
Yeah. Ooh. Now it's going to be even harder for a woman to come forward.
Yeah. That's
moving forward. You have done
unnecessary.
More damage. It really was just harsh.
It's so... I just don't know how anybody could so definitively land on either side.
That was hard to see. But I think that if you are a survivor of abuse, it is a slap in the face when someone wants to try to own the same pain that you have.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of emotion in that. Anyways, we could probably do an entire episode about this documentary, but... y'all watch it on Netflix. I want to.
Yeah, it's good.
Katie, I want to know what you think after you watch it.
I need to watch. Yeah, because I kept up with the trial the whole time.
Oh, you did?
When it was happening. Okay. But it, you know, and I watched a lot of it, but then a lot of it was through social media. So I am interested.
This time last year, a little bit over a year ago, the spring, April, May, June, sometime.
Yes. And, you know, Disney issued him an apology. Disney had dropped him.
Yeah, they dropped him.
Oh, yeah, as Grindelwald.
They dropped him as that. And, of course, pirates will be, you know. And then they apologized and said they would love to have him back. And as of right now, he has said, no, thank you.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
But he lost. That's what he was trying to say, was that he lost. I mean, it devastated his career.
Because you have to prove, like in the case he was proven, he had to prove that what she said, you know, actually materially affected him.
And Disney dropped him after that. After that article, after she wrote that.
Right.
So that
that was in the middle of the whole Me Too thing. All you had to do was accuse anybody.
Mm-hmm. And that's not right.
It's not. But again, here we go with social media. And that was what the documentary was pointing a spotlight on.
And I think they were good at being neutral.
Yeah.
They did not have, you know, an axe to grind other than with social media.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, as far as the story itself, I thought they walked it right down the middle of the road. That's what you want in a good documentary, that lets you make up your own mind.
They did, and they also were right down the middle showing the social media extremes, his supporters, her supporters, you know.
The nuts.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, can I say that?
Sure.
For sure. Yeah,
the nuts. And there were a lot of them.
Yeah, lots. All right.
All right,
are we talking about anything else before we get to the...
No, I was just trying to kill some time. We've killed 15 minutes now, so at least this episode will be somewhere in the 45 to 50 minute neighborhood now that we've killed 15 minutes.
Oh, let me say something before we get going.
Now we're up to an hour. Go for it.
Let's do this. This is a mini shout out thing. I don't know if y'all saw the comment on our Facebook. Jonathan Ledbetter, who's a fan of the show, he comments and sends us messages a good bit. He reminded me that the children's rhyme that we talked about last week.
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
They actually were in our episode on Viola Hyatt. We talked about that same rhyme that they had redone for Viola Hyatt. Viola Hyatt, if I could talk today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The gave her lover 40 wax and gave his brother 41 or whatever.
So hey, I love it.
Just repurposed that.
Thank old, you. Yeah,
that
thanks.
Old ditty.
Yeah, thanks for the comment. Yeah. And thank you for listening.
Thanks, Jonathan yeah. Ledbetter.
I was like, oh, I forgot about that. People remember more than we do.
Speaking of research and going back and remembering things, you know, it's a lot different. It depends on how we do these stories. If it's a story that's well known, that there are books written about it, it's a lot easier to do the research for it than it is for a local case, because a lot of times there's not as much information.
Mm-hmm.
You have to go in different directions mm-hmm. or do more things. Act like a journalist is what I'm trying not to say.
You have to be above mediocre.
Yeah. So.
And you rose to that challenge, Scott.
Well,
I'm looking at your notes here. Look at all
I've
that.
I've got notes everywhere, but look, most of these pages are blank. So
that's okay.
Yeah. So that's a whole legal pad.
You got a stack of
yeah. I got some stuff here. I went to the county courthouse.
Oh, always fun.
2 hours later, I got these four pages that I thought might come in handy. And as I was walking out, and I'll talk a little bit more about this later, but as I was walking out, I bumped into someone who was actually at Yellow Creek Fish Camp the night that all of this happened.
Oh my goodness!
Wow.
So I got some really good information from that person, and I'll mention him in a minute. But
okay,
that just goes to show. You can do all of this research. I finally found a computer that had some, you know, a lot of the case files in it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm picking through for 2 hours trying to find what to bring home with me.
Mm-hmm.
And then the 5 minute conversation I have in the lobby is what I ended up
more
using.
Useful.
Yeah. So
yeah,
you just funny. Never know.
All right. Well, let's do this.
Okay. So we're going to go back to December the 16th of 1999.
Okay.
Bert Latham was the assistant district attorney
Oh, Bert.
At the time. Don't we all miss Bert?
Mm-hmm.
Bo Jolly was a brand new officer on the Cherokee County Sheriff's Department.
Okay, we remember Bo.
Yeah, Bo's been with us before. That was back in season one. That was the first part of the Barbara Ann Roberts mm-hmm. story, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't remember what Katie titled that episode. It was something catchy, mm-hmm. but I don't remember.
It was. We had Bo and we had his daughter on.
Yeah. We're and you right. said that you had been to the Yellow Creek area recently when Stacy reminded you about this.
Yes,
episode.
we were on the water, so we could okay. see everything from the water. From the
so, boat. Yeah, if you've never been to Weiss Lake here in Cherokee County, one of the prettiest areas on Weiss Lake is the area around Yellow Creek Falls.
Yes.
It's a 100-foot high waterfall with some swimming areas and some places where you can jump off of the cliff and the kids can play on the rocks and you can walk up to the base of the falls. There's a trail that goes all the way up. A lot of videos that you can watch on YouTube if you want to create a mental picture of what this area looks like. But it's a very popular area for boaters. Yellow Creek Fish Camp sounds like this big sprawling facility.
Does it?
Doesn't it?
Yeah.
But it's
maybe
not.
To an outside.
Yeah,
say,
maybe to it.
When you say camp, fish yeah, camp,
right.
you know, yeah.
This is a 20 by 40 foot long concrete slab. It's made out of concrete blocks that haven't been painted since paint was invented. Just the first year after that and never since. There's a covered porch on one end. It's not very big. It's just basically a little country store out in the middle of nowhere
mm-hmm.
on Highway 273 by one of the most picturesque areas scenes anywhere on Weiss Lake.
Yes.
So it's a very nice area, but if you just plop down in front of Yellow Creek Fish Camp, you wouldn't think necessarily that it was a popular area.
Right.
Especially for a convenience store.
Right.
Shoppers.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's just, there's nothing around.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so on December the 16th, 1999, a guy named Kevin Dion Conkle, who was 32 years old, I knew Dion, we called him in school. He was a couple of years older than me. I remember him slamming a door in my face when I was about sixth grade.
Oh my gosh, why'd he slam a door in your face?
He was mean.
Okay, so he's definitely the villain of our story.
I remember staying away from him.
So okay. this guy
he was just, he was the guy who would jerk your books out of your arms as you walked down the hall.
Just a turd.
Yeah.
But he went to Cedar Bluff.
That's correct. I don't think he stayed around long enough to graduate.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't find my sixth grade yearbook this morning to see if I was right about what year it was. I was either in sixth grade or seventh grade. And he was supposed to be three grades ahead, and he was only two because he'd failed a grade, I think.
Gotcha.
Something like that.
Okay.
Anyway, Dion continued his bad ways on into adulthood. He was married at one point, has a daughter, at least a daughter, right, Katie? He'd been in jail before. I looked him up on the state's prisoner database.
Mm-hmm.
And it's him. He looks like an older version of the guy that I remember.
And what had he been in jail for?
He had been in jail previously for possession of a controlled substance.
Okay.
He'd spent a year in jail and hadn't been out of jail long mm-hmm. when these events took place that we're about to tell you about. So on December the 16th, 1999, Betty Wilson was sitting, she was in the store alone. She and her husband, Don, I believe is his name, had owned Yellow Creek Fish Camp for 13 years when this happened.
Okay.
She's sitting at the counter. She's on the telephone with her friend, Betty.
Oh, her name's Betty.
I'm sorry, Gloria. Gloria okay. is her friend's name.
Okay, so
Betty Wilson.
Betty's in the store
she's in
on the
store.
Phone with Gloria.
Correct.
Okay.
And so her friend hears Betty tell a story about two guys who walk in and look suspicious. They don't stay in the store long. They buy one piece of candy and then they leave.
Mm.
5 minutes later, Betty is still on the telephone with her friend.
Okay.
And she screams out, oh God, one of them is coming through the door and he's got a hood on.
Uh-oh.
The next thing Gloria heard was a horrible scream and then two gunshots, one right after the other.
Oh my gosh.
She heard a series of scuffling noises. Then she heard a high-pitched beep, most likely from the cash register. She immediately pushed down the button on her phone, called 911, and reported the shooting at Yellow Creek.
Now, when you say push down the button on the phone,
uh-huh.
explain that.
That was an old phone hanging on the wall, probably in her kitchen. And so in order for her to end that call, to disconnect that call, she had to hold down the handle that holds the receiver.
Yes.
When it's in its resting
position. So they're talking on landlines.
Yes, they're talking on landlines.
And she disconnects to call 911.
Probably with a rotary dial.
Gotcha.
So it took a second.
All right.
So there's a reserve police officer who lives not too far from Yellow Creek Fish Camp, and he hears the 911 call on his scanner because rescue squad frequencies weren't scrambled at the time. So a lot of folks had a scanner in their house.
Oh, yeah, in their house. They could hear everything
that's
going on.
To listen to everything that's going on in the community mm-hmm. as far as safety workers, fire department, mm-hmm. police officers.
Mm-hmm.
So this officer hears the call, and he speeds over to Yellow Creek. When he gets there, there's no cars in the parking lot. He looked in the front door, and he saw Betty Wilson slumped over in her chair in a pool of blood.
Mm.
He did not go in the store. He ran to a nearby payphone.
Because he wouldn't have had a cell phone.
Because he wouldn't have had a cell phone, and probably the radio transmission out in Yellow Creek at the time wasn't very good.
No, probably
Probably
not.
Still isn't. anyway, he ran to a nearby payphone. He called 911, verified the scene, that the crime had taken place and secured the scene.
Okay, good for him.
So the crime scene is part of what I found out about as I was at the courthouse earlier in the week. I was coming out of the room where I had used the computer for a couple of hours, and I bumped into Terrell Ransom, who is he's a sheriff's deputy now, but 24 years ago, he was the chief of police in Leesburg.
Okay.
Where and
this near where this happened.
Yes, he was one of the first officers to arrive at the scene.
Okay.
And he said it was obvious when you walked in that Betty was deceased. She'd been shot in the chest, she'd been shot in the head, and stabbed in the neck with what looked like a long, some sort of big knife.
Well, now that seems unnecessary.
Yeah.
Was the knife still there?
No, it was not.
It was.
There were a couple of shell cartridges, spent cartridges on the floor. Sitting beside Betty Wilson on the counter was a piece of newspaper. Maybe she'd been working the crossword puzzle. But over in the margin, she had written down Toyota, dark red, tag number 13BA739.
And let me guess, were those the guys who came in to buy the candy?
Those were the guys who came in to buy the candy.
The suspicious
that
looking
looked creepy and
guys.
Weird.
And she thought to write that down.
Mm-hmm. She did indeed. And Terrell Ransom, during that short conversation that I had with him last week, he regularly stopped by Yellow Creek on his patrol
mm-hmm.
route. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times he sat and chit-chatted. He and Betty were friends.
Okay.
And he said that they would occasionally talk about what to do mm-hmm. if she ever found herself alone and somebody came in that looked like it was going to be a crime or mm-hmm. menacing in some way.
Probably in thinking about a robbery at that point,
correct.
Not a murder.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And Terrell said, you know, I just told Betty, let them take whatever they want.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked him, I said, do you think she had a gun under the counter? And he said it wouldn't have mattered if she had.
No.
Because he just walked right in.
I mean, it was
she was
quick.
Still sitting in her chair.
Yeah.
Wow.
And she's on the phone with her friend and she just gets out. Oh my God. You know, he's got on a hood.
Yeah.
They're back or something like that. Right.
Yeah.
And then that was it.
Yeah. That was the whole thing. Mm-hmm. So they run the tag number, and it comes up an address just a few miles away. So some sheriff's department investigators go to the address. There's a truck there that matches the description.
Okay.
One of the investigators shined his flashlight inside the truck. They don't have a search warrant yet, but he shined his flashlight inside the window. He saw a pistol on the front seat.
Okay.
He saw part of a cash register lying in the bed of the pickup truck.
Suspicious.
Mm-hmm. Immediately, Dion Conkle and his friend, a guy named Jerry Wells, they both come out of the trailer and surrender to police and are arrested. Now, here's one of the big reasons why one of these guys is in prison without the possibility of parole and the other got two life sentences, but he's going to be eligible for parole on both of those life sentences. If he's not already, then he will be soon. Conkle had blood on his clothes. Mm. The other guy did not.
Yeah, that's some evidence right there, yeah.
And so what's eventually going to happen is...
Other dude's going to roll?
Yeah.
Wells or whatever.
Wells is going to roll on Conkle before maybe the opposite has a chance to occur. But whatever reason, his story seemed to make more sense. I'm sure they both had stories to tell. And after they got the facts put together and held up the facts beside the stories, the story that Wells told made more sense than the story that Conkle told, I suppose. Inside the truck, after they got a search warrant, they found a bloody hunting knife, a bloody pair of gloves, a bloody pistol, and a total of $600 in cash. It's looking pretty incriminating at this point.
That's a lot of evidence there.
There were some bloody cigarette cartons inside the house.
So those typically were stored behind the clerk, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
In a store.
Yeah.
So if you shoot the clerk and you have the blood splatter and then you steal the cigarettes. Mm-hmm.
That could be absolutely what happens there. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of a weird setup at Yellow Creek. And I think it's still the same now that it was all those years ago. When you go in the door, sort of the whole left side it's a long counter.
Okay.
And it's got sort of a low area in it. Betty Wilson was sitting in a chair. I think she was an older lady. And so the counter had been built in a way that she could operate the cash register
from her chair,
from a seated position.
And so that explains why she didn't have the opportunity to do anything, because if it's right there when you walk in the door.
Yeah. I mean, from me to you, three feet away from walking in the door, there is where the register is.
And see, that helps because I was thinking, I'm envisioning the whole time the counter and the cash register in the back of the store.
Got you.
You walk in and it's to the back,
yeah.
But it's to the left. Mm-hmm. So, okay.
Yeah. And it's just an old building, big window right there. So that's how she was able to see
them coming,
before they got into the store.
Man, I wish she'd had a gun ready.
Yeah. So the fact that Jerry Wells did not have blood on his clothing.
Mm-hmm.
And Conkle did is going to lead them to believe that was the version of what happened, that Jerry was the driver and that Conkle went inside, fired the two shots, used the knife, grabbed the register. Terrell Ransom told me that when they took the register outside, the paper was unspooling from the reel, and it was just left.
It just dropped.
He said, we knew exactly where the truck was parked.
Because of that.
Because they pointed us right to it.
Not everybody's a smart criminal.
Yeah, true. Oh, and the Bo Jolly story that I wanted to tell. I talked to Bo last week, and then he and I played phone tag later in the week. But he was able to tell me during a conversation we had that he was one of the young guys on the force, right, at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so he got the job from Roy Wynn, who was the sheriff of the county at the time. Bo had to sit out all night in his patrol car and guard the store over the course of that night just to make sure somebody didn't, try to break in and steal things or disturb a crime scene.
Mm-hmm.
So Bo, as a young guy, got that job.
I bet it gets really dark out there at night.
Oh, yeah. Are you kidding?
Mm.
Because it's a stretch of road.
It's a secluded area.
Yeah, with the water making the sound echo in weird ways.
That was quite eerie, I bet, for him.
I would not.
I'm sure Bo was fine, but I would not be.
Yeah, same. No,
Yeah, Bo was a brave young man, so we didn't have to worry about that.
Yeah.
So it was, that was in, all of this happened on December the 16th, 1999. It was January of 2000 before the grand jury here in Cherokee County indicted Conkle for the capital murder of Betty Wilson during the course of first degree robbery. That means that it's a potential death penalty case.
Mm.
That's capital murder. He was arraigned for on those charges in June of 2000 and pleaded not guilty at the time.
Mm. Did he not know the evidence they had against him?
He did.
Is that bad lawyer advice, or was he just going against
the inclination we all have to, if you're facing the gas chamber, maybe it was still the electric chair in 99.
Well, you know, you would think if you would plea, that would come off the table.
I would think so too.
I don't know.
Yeah.
But between June of 2000, when he pleaded not guilty, and April of 2001, Conkle completely changed his mind.
He decided
that he would plead guilty in exchange for the death chamber being taken off the table. He would get life without parole. Mm-hmm. I guess at that point, at least you've got your life, and then you can go and dig into your law books and try to find some way to get out of it.
Work on the appeal process.
Yeah. So that's what he was convinced to do between June of 2000 and April of 2001. Now he's going to let me not jump ahead. Even though he changed his plea to guilty, in the state of Alabama, you still have to conduct a trial in front of a jury.
Okay.
If life without parole is the punishment the state is.
Okay.
So there's a 1-day trial here in the county. They present the evidence. I tried to find the court transcript. I see a lot of references to the court transcript in some of these other documents, but nobody could figure out where to point me to get an actual transcript from the 1-day court proceeding. Mm-hmm. But I think there's enough information here that we can figure out what happened.
Now, who is the judge?
The judge was Cole.
Well, Randall Cole.
I'm sure it was Judge Cole.
We've mentioned Judge Cole before.
We have indeed. Recently retired.
Mm-hmm. So I had another question and it just went poof out of my head. I'll think of it in a minute.
Okay. Yeah. Whenever.
Oh, I remember.
Oh, yeah. Tell me.
Did Wells testify against him during this 1-day court hearing?
I think he did. There's enough references in here to ways that they believe that the story happened.
Okay.
That obviously make it sound like Wells is up there.
Mm-hmm. I would think you would definitely need him.
Yeah.
You would want his testimony, because he's the only other set of eyeballs there.
Well, here's another thing that I found out about in that 2-hour stint I spent at the courthouse. It was a document that I didn't keep, and I actually just now remembered it. There was a 3-page handwritten letter in those court documents in part of this case file that was written by somebody who had been incarcerated with Dion Conkle after the murder took place.
Oh.
In which he was bragging about what he had done.
You walk in and you shoot an unarmed older lady.
And then stab this old lady and how much money it was. And he had told
$600.
Him that the other guy didn't want to take. Yeah. He had told this buddy or this inmate, this cellmate, that the other guy didn't want his money, his half of the money. Mm-hmm. And that was the same story that Jerry Wells told to the police officers.
So did Jerry know that he was going to go in and shoot her, or did he think he was just going to rob the store? It almost makes you think that Jerry wasn't prepared for the murder.
Yeah. Well, those two guys, they worked for Jerry's father in some capacity. I think they were probably in the landscaping business or chopping tree limbs or whatever, but they didn't make a lot of money doing what it was that they did, but they lived together and they both worked for Jerry's father.
Okay.
At some manual labor job. And so that's why they were together. It was about 3:30 on a December afternoon. So it wasn't quite dark yet, but I'll bet that the sun was already behind the mountains
over
there.
I bet it was.
And it was, you know, everything was in shadow.
Yeah, because
just a creepy afternoon.
By 4:15 on a day like that, it's dark. Getting dark. Yeah, it's dark. I mean, 4:30, it's as dark as
middle
it's
of December,
be
a week before Christmas.
10 p.m.,
and
you know?
So how could they have expected this store to have a lot of money?
That and that's another thing. Yeah, it just makes me think that Wells just thought that they were just he was going to go in.
Maybe we're going to get some cigarettes
and
some
rob
stuff.
The store yeah. and mm. move on.
Yeah,
it that is consistent, especially when he's saying, "I don't even want my part of the money now."
Yeah,
it's yeah. like it was like, wait a minute, and I don't know that for a fact, but yeah. anyways, I was
yeah.
just
no, it's yeah, about that. It's perplexing.
I don't know anything about Wells and I don't know anything about the situation, but it
I didn't really find a
that
lot.
That would be my guess.
I didn't mm-hmm. find a lot about Wells in the document. Of course, I wasn't looking through the Wells documents. I was looking through the Conkle documents, but there was a couple of mentions of him. I do know that he got, like I said, he got the two, I guess, in exchange for what would have been testimony against
Conkle,
if it had been required, mm-hmm. he got the two life sentences.
Mm-hmm.
But you're eligible for parole in 15 years in Alabama if you get a life sentence.
Well, you know, if...
As we found out the hard way.
Watch out who you hang out with and what they're doing, because if mm-hmm. you are involved in a felony...
Oh, man.
...and a murder happens, mm-hmm. someone dies in the commission of that felony, you're
on the hook.
You're guilty of murder.
Yeah.
If you're riding along with someone mm-hmm. and they do something like that, get yeah. ready.
Mm-hmm.
You are involved mm-hmm. at that point. Man, what a terrible place to be in, and I hate that. And then the fact that he's bragging to his cellmate mm-hmm. about this. So the cellmate just decides to write this letter.
We've all talked about how reliable jailhouse informants
yeah,
are.
Yeah, yeah.
So who
That's
knows?
True. That's true.
I mean, it was specific in several areas. I read it twice.
The guy obviously knew about the crime, basically.
He must have known enough things about the case that he couldn't have heard somewhere else
yeah.
that it made the authorities believe, okay, this guy's not pulling our leg.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe.
Gotcha. Okay.
So today's episode is brought to you in part by A&W Outdoor Services. You know, they're located right here in Cherokee County, and I called Alan myself just a few weeks ago, and he and his crew came out to my house, pressure washed the whole thing. It looks brand new. Well, as brand new as my house can possibly look after 25 years. But all I did was call Alan at 256-706-7964. He and the guys showed up and cleaned up everything. It looked fantastic. The pollen has fallen a little bit since then. So if you haven't done this already, now's the perfect time to call Alan and A&W Outdoor Services at 256-706-7964 and let them do for you what they've already done for me.
It's time to plan your best vacation ever right here in Cherokee County, Alabama.
Many outdoor adventures await. Wet a hook in beautiful Weiss Lake, swing away at Cherokee Pines Golf Club, climb to the best view around at Cherokee Rock Village, hike the Little River Canyon National Preserve, take a days-long splash at Pirates Bay Water Park, and much, much more.
The Cherokee County Chamber of Commerce and Tourism has a full list of recommended lodging facilities, RV sites, and campgrounds, and they're all set up to suit your vacation needs, whatever they may be.
So come see us from wherever you are. And if you already live right here in lovely Cherokee County, plan your summer 2023 staycation with the Chamber by visiting cherokee-chamber.org.
Are you in the market for a full-time Weiss Lake home or recreational lot? Let Trini Davis and Elizabeth Powell put their all-star property group at Keller Williams Realty to work for you. Trini and Elizabeth are locals themselves, so they know the Weiss Lake area, and with over 40 years of experience, they're professional listing and buying agents, talented home stagers and photographers, and specialized marketing team will work to make your lakefront dreams come true. Check out the Keller Williams team on Facebook at All Star Property Rome. You can also visit at All Star Property Rome to browse their images on Instagram or give them a call at 706-844-7493. That's the All-Star Property Group with Keller Williams Realty at 706-844-7493. You can hit pause, call them now, and make your Weiss Lake dreams a reality.
Conkle goes to jail immediately. He had been in jail since the event had happened. He'd been held without bond, so he wasn't able to run around and... hang out with his family or get into more mischief. But he had been a bad seed in the county for a long time. And one of the things that he said later when he appealed was that he asked his attorneys to, he said he wanted to go to trial. Mm. He wanted a change of venue because he had such a bad reputation here in Cherokee County that he didn't feel like he could get a fair trial. And one of his attorneys in an affidavit I found, pretty much confirms that that would have been the case. He said everybody knew what a bad guy this guy was in Cherokee County.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to be one of the things that Conkle argues in some of his appeals that happened later. Because within a week of him being sentenced on April the 23rd of 2001, he's already filed, I'm sorry, within a month, in May of 2001, he's already filed his first appeal.
And so he got life without parole.
Correct.
Okay. And so then he's filing an appeal.
Yes.
And that one day trial, it was, where was that?
That was here in Cherokee County. It was here. In the courthouse, in the main courtroom upstairs.
And I mean, that may be a valid argument if you're a defense attorney to try to get
a change
of venue. Yeah. But I think it takes a lot for that to happen,
well,
doesn't it?
It does, because some other county has to foot the bill that was going to be your problem to solve.
Mm-hmm.
But he didn't, there wasn't going to be any testimony anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying this the right way. If he got the case that he wanted, if he got the trial that he wanted, then he ran the risk of being in a lot of trouble, of getting the death penalty. And so they're telling him, hey, don't do that. You don't want to testify. You're going, if the jury finds out what we already know, you're going to the death chamber.
Mm-hmm. Because in 1999, in Alabama, it would have been the chamber at that time, right?
Well, that's what I said a minute ago. I'm not sure when we switched from the chair to the gas chamber.
I'll look that up.
It's
really
around that time.
Okay.
Somewhere just in that general vicinity. Anyway, so that was what they convinced him of, this Alabama prison project that Katie and I were talking about off the air earlier, that we're not even sure if it's still around.
Yeah.
But at the time, it was a nonprofit group that if you were a prisoner who was up against either a death penalty sentence or a life in prison without parole sentence, these folks would reach out and try to help you to make sure that you had access to all of the legal venues owed to you, right? I mean, just to make sure that every T got crossed and every I got dotted before you went to the chair.
That's what it seems like,
or got locked away forever.
Yeah.
Because when I pulled up Conkle's criminal file on the computer, under his sentence, it says years, 999, months, 99, days, 99. They just fill it full of nines and forget about you. Kelly, what were you going to say? I'm sorry.
So, according to deathpenaltyinfo.org for the state of Alabama, Alabama electrocuted their last person in 2002.
Okay.
So, he would have gone to the chair.
He would have been sentenced to die in the chair, but by the time he got...
It would have been something
else. He would have been.
But apparently, we electrocuted Linda Lion Block.
That name sounds familiar.
So
maybe we should look into that.
Interesting there. But that was our last person to undergo that punishment involuntarily in the state. And we are now lethal injection.
Yeah.
Which we don't do very well.
Yeah, which we're not very good at.
We allowed that, but we continue to allow inmates to select electrocution at the time.
Why would you choose anything but injection now?
Yeah.
You got a real good chance of it not working.
Yeah, we have an issue here with that. We should probably do an episode on that at some point.
I think you're probably right. Well, one of the things that I found out about, I mentioned the fact that he changed his mind between the time he was arraigned and the time the case started. And there were other reasons in addition to the ones that we've already talked about. Apparently, he had been instructed by his attorneys that the photos and the video that would have been evidence in a trial are very gruesome. Obviously, this woman's been shot twice and been stabbed with a very large... The knife was 10 and a half inches long when they found it.
And that is, I mean, like Katie said earlier, excessive.
Unnecessary. Like, what were they doing?
Somebody wanted to see what it looked like when that happened.
That's another
kind of
level.
A thing. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but that's another level.
And you had experience with this individual growing up, and it was just widely known that this a bad dude. Avoid.
By the time, I mean, I'm talking about when I was 12 and he was 15. So by the time, you know, this is 17 years later, he's 32 when this happens. So he's become that person that everybody just, you know, when he pulls into the parking lot, you're like, oh no, not that guy.
Sounds like an antisocial personality, which would have been like sociopath, psychopath.
Yeah.
Back in the day.
I have that one overriding memory is the day he, and I know that he did it on purpose because I could see him cut his eyes behind him to see if I was back there.
What door did he slam?
It was the door between, the building doesn't even exist anymore. This was back when there was a two-story wooden and brick building at Cedar Bluff School that Katie has only seen pictures of.
Oh,
that are all very old.
Did it hit you in the face?
That was the old front building?
Pow. Yeah,
the old building in the front.
Hit you right in the face.
Right in the face. Damn. Right before I got to what now everybody calls the library. Back in the day, we called it the old gym because it was older than the new one.
Okay.
Which was still 25 years old.
Now there is a new old gym.
Yeah, there's a new old gym and an old new gym, and the old gym is a library.
Okay, fun.
Something like that.
Well, that sounds good.
We get confused at Cedar Bluff.
And
we don't have that many buildings, Bowies.
I've only been inside Cedar Bluff School one time.
Oh, yeah.
My whole life. So it's very hard for me to picture how this looks.
More times between the two of us than just once.
Yeah, a couple.
Katie and I have been in a few times more than that.
Yeah, yeah. As we have stated before, the two of you graduated from Cedar Bluff. Mm-hmm. I graduated from Cherokee County.
That's
high
right.
School.
25 years combined time in that school. You didn't have kindergarten, did you?
Head Start.
Oh, was it in that building? Mm-hmm. Oh, then 26.
Yeah. So Cedar Bluff is a K-12.
Yes.
Whereas the Cherokee County schools, we have elementary school, middle school, and high school. So.
Who gives a crap about that? Why are you telling everybody?
Because I want people to know about us.
We just moved from the front building to the back building when it was time to... When I was there, the front building was elementary school. The back building was the high school.
That was it.
Well, it's kind of weird because with Cherokee County, you've got Center Elementary School. You've got Center Middle School. And then you go to Cherokee County High School.
Yeah, that was always a point of contention.
That's strange.
Yeah.
With other schools.
I know. I am very aware that I am the black sheep sitting here. You guys, at Cedar Bluff and myself from Cherokee County. So
yeah, you're an Auburn fan too.
Well, yeah.
So you're a black sheep in this room in that way as well. That's all I'm saying.
Or I'm the one shining light.
Or that.
I mean, however you want to look at it. You know.
You are the future.
You are in charge here, so maybe we should just back up.
Exactly. Desperate guys, that's all I have really. I mean, that's how that whole thing played out.
So he's been in
jail.
Today?
He's still in jail and it will be for the rest of his life. He was there last week anyway. The last time I looked, he was still there.
So the appeals process is over.
That appeals process is over, but he was in court as recently as 2021 trying to end the garnishment of his wages. He was fined about $1,400 in court costs and restitution when this case was over. So here we are 20 years later, and maybe he still hasn't paid his $985.
Well, I mean, they're going to garnish it.
That was part of it anyway.
Until you pay it.
So. I think it was $1,400 total. So he was trying to get them to stop garnishing his wages in 2021.
Like his prison wages?
I guess so, yeah. I guess he's got some sort of...
And those are not very high.
Menial job, yes.
No,
70
no.
cents a year. I mean, it's not much.
I'm sorry, but you're going to have to pay your fines
it's
until
even less
it's
than
over.
I make.
Yeah.
So
what about the other guy, Wells? Is he out of jail?
I was afraid to look. I was afraid that he would be out of jail and would hear about the podcast and want to come on. And so I didn't look very hard.
Did he go to school with you too?
He did not. I don't know that guy.
I don't know. I don't know the name.
Not as far as I know, but I didn't look him up. I didn't look up his face or his image to see if it was anybody.
Well, we were mostly focused on Conkle anyway because he was the one who murdered Betty. So that is the
official version of the story. He says that it happened exactly the other way around.
Wells did it.
Yeah, Conkle says that Wells did it. And the reason that he had blood on him and Wells didn't was because Wells had already taken a shower at the house before the cops showed up. And that Wells touched Conkle on the foot or on the leg to get blood on his pants. When they were in the truck together. That's his version of the story.
Is this before
nobody believed that
we're testing for gunshot residue on our hands? Because that would be foolproof.
They determined that the gun, you're right, and that's nowhere in the notes. They determined that the gun in the truck was the murder weapon.
Mm-hmm.
They used ballistics to determine that. But
and the knife was used
and
as
the
well.
Knife was, the knife had Betty Wilson's blood on it.
Whose fingerprints were on the knife? Found,
there's nothing about fingerprints. There's nothing about DNA. There's nothing about the, like you said,
gunshot
with
residue?
Yeah, the gunshot residue.
Because I mean,
so I don't know.
If one of them's got gunshot residue on their hands and the other doesn't. Bingo.
It's interesting
about fingerprints not being there too. It's almost surprising to me that his appeal didn't pick up on something like that.
Well, it almost makes me believe that all of that information is there somewhere.
Remember, we
never had a full trial anyway.
That's true.
It was a one-day thing. So maybe
he plead guilty.
Well, maybe that's another reason why he was convinced that he should plead guilty. It's not going to affect his ability to appeal after the fact and claim whatever BS he wants.
But his lawyer was trying to do the job of keeping him alive to do so.
The Rocky Watson, is that what you said the guy's name is? In an affidavit that he wrote in the years after this, as the appeals were going through, that's what he said. Mm-hmm. He said, my job was to do the best defense I could for my client, and the best thing I could do for him was try to save his life, and that's what I did.
Well, and that's, sounds right.
Yeah. And he and Sherry Carver were actually the defense attorneys.
Working together.
Yeah, they worked together on this case those years ago. And I guess Mike O'Dell was the DA, and then Bert was the assistant DA, right? Would Mike have been in 99? Mike would have been in 99, right?
Was he? Okay.
Or maybe he got elected in 2000 for the first time. Maybe Igo was on.
Either one.
Out. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not sure exactly. I should have called Mike. I didn't.
If you have been listening to our podcast from the beginning, you've heard all of these names we just dropped before. Yeah.
Anytime we talk about a local case, a lot of these guys, especially if they happened in the last 20 or 30 years.
You're going to hear Igo. You're going to hear Bert Latham.
O'Dell.
You're going to hear Mike O'Dell. You're going to hear Bo Jolly.
Yeah, the guys who have been.
You're going to hear Judge Randall Cole.
Yes.
Yeah, so that's our...
Sherry Carver, she used to be a judge.
Judge
Carver.
Right.
She's still practicing attorney right down the road.
Law. Yeah, I saw her in front of the courthouse one day last week coming down the stairs.
Mm-hmm. So, all these names are, I'm sure we've mentioned before, but this was right in our backyard.
Yeah, very much so.
Interestingly enough, had Betty talked with her police officer friend, who was her police officer friend, you said?
Terrell Ransom.
Had they talked about her riding down after they took whatever they wanted the license plate in the car and all of that, or did she just think to do that?
I think that Terrell told me that was something that she did from time to time, and it was, and the way he said it, it wasn't like he remembered immediately and knew right away to look for something written on the edge of a piece of newspaper. Mm-hmm. But when they all found it, Terrell thought, yeah, that's exactly like something she would do.
And so let's just think about this. Betty solved her own murder.
Correct. That's true.
By writing that down. Because if she had not written that, I don't think they would have known where to start. I mean, there would have been no way for them to know.
You know, it was so desolate out there where this happened. And we heard about what the truck looked like. Mm-hmm. If not for the fact that police knew which truck, which exact truck
they
to
went
look for.
Right to them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. With blood.
Because they ran the tag.
But they had no reason
red-handed.
To believe that anybody is literally red-handed.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They had no reason to believe anybody was going to know it was them because there was nobody around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they had no way of knowing she had written that down. And it's because they came in and scoped the place out first.
Yeah.
And so then they
thought,
were acting strange.
Getaway.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And because she didn't really give any information to her friend that she was on the phone with other than... there are these two guys in here that were acting strange.
Yeah.
And then, oh my God, here they come back.
Yeah. And if there is more information from that phone call, again, we never got to it because we didn't have a trial.
And how terrible for her friend to have to hear all of that.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
That's horrible. Yeah, horrible.
But at least she got the police out there quickly.
She did. She knew immediately and called them. And with Betty writing that down, and now she has justice at least.
Yes.
You know?
She did get some justice. It took it took about 2 years for the county to release to her husband the $600 that was in evidence. But he finally got the $600 back. That was one little note. I'd never thought about how that works, but there was one page. It was just a note where the Carolyn Smith, who was the circuit clerk at the time and was for a long time, friend of we all know Carolyn. That was the document she'd had to sign to turn over the $600 that had been in evidence for 2 years back to the Wilson family.
Is there just a timeline on that, or
I guess maybe after
probably
the
with
appeals,
an active case, yeah, it was
the
evidence.
Appeals run out. Something. There's a magic number somewhere.
Well, you said 2 years though. I mean, it took about 2 years to get him.
Yeah.
To get this,
I think it was 2002. I think it was the year after the trial, the one day trial. Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right.
Anyway, that is the story of Murder at Yellow Creek. Mm-hmm. You guys want to hear a little palate cleanser?
I do. Yes, definitely.
So I sent this to you guys.
I didn't read it.
Do you remember? You don't remember it?
I didn't read it.
Oh, it's funny. You're going to like it.
Good.
Okay, so.
I'll hear it for the first time.
A former Alabama Walmart employee.
Ooh, fun.
is facing dozens of criminal charges after authorities say she set multiple fires inside the Leeds location of Walmart, causing more than $100,000 in damages.
I read the headline of that, actually.
And why?
Well, it turns out, Katie, that Jayla Fain, age 26 of Pell City, was looking to do a little shoplifting and wanted to create a diversion.
Oh, but multiple fires? Did she want to shoplift in different sections?
The more diversions, the better. We know that there were 32 people in the store at the time because that's how many charges of reckless endangerment she faced when it was all over.
Oh,
nice. So she had to create some multiple.
What did she steal? I gotta know. What'd she steal?
They found $500 worth of Walmart merchandise in her house when they searched it.
Less than a felony amount.
Good Lord.
Well, it wasn't until she destroyed a Walmart.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. Those are the felonies.
$100,000 in damages. She set three fires. Hang on. Let's get to this part. She set the fires, one in the ladies' restroom and the other two in what is apparently the store's gigantic women's lingerie department, because two fires in that area of the store.
Well, she didn't want to shoplift any lingerie.
I guess she got all the granny panties she wanted and then moved on to other things. I don't know. I don't know how big this woman is. Maybe she's tiny. Maybe she was.
Well, you can have tiny granny panties.
Yeah, granny panties are for all, Scott.
Yes, they come in all sizes.
Don't hate on the granny panties.
All mine are too small. They make other sizes. Nobody tells me anything. Yeah, so, she had loaded up a store cart with stolen items, and then when everybody panicked and ran to the fires, she's out the front door with her buggy with $500 worth of stuff.
But these cameras are everywhere. I mean,
everywhere. Every bit of it.
Of course they did. Yeah,
so
every inch of the Walmart.
Do people not know in 2023 that Walmart, they have cameras?
Walmart doesn't play around with you shoplifters.
No.
It's a huge business expense every year. They do stories about it. Billions and billions and billions of dollars that these retailers lose every year to just shoplifting. Just
if you think you've got away with it, you haven't.
Yeah.
They keep up with it.
Really?
Yes. They know what you've stolen. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they let it go until it's a certain amount.
Or sometimes you're flagged and when you try to come back in the store, they get you.
Yeah.
They know.
Yeah. Those cameras are there.
And they prosecute.
Mm-hmm. They do. They got good lawyers.
Are you guys trying to tell me not to go back to Walmart again? That's what it sounds like.
Be careful, Scott. Right. Steal your granny panties somewhere else.
Scott, the way you can't keep a secret if you stole from Walmart, we'd all know about it.
Yeah, this is true.
You would announce it on the podcast.
You'd be like, actually.
You just have to tell me it's off the record first.
Oh, and then, it's your business. We can't tell you what to.
Then it's in the vault.
All right. Well, thank you, Scott, for the story today and for the palate cleanser.
Yeah.
I appreciate that. And
thought we needed that.
Yeah. Our hearts go out to the Wilson family. And
say something nice about us on social media. Go and visit us online at truecrimeoneasystreet.com. You can send us an email, say something nice there. Or you can say something nice about us wherever you listen to your podcast, Apple, iTunes, Spotify, at Google, wherever. There's hundreds of other places. We don't know them all. What are you looking at us for?
Where are you listening to it right now?
Yeah, wherever you're doing it right now, just go say something nice about us, and maybe we'll say something nice about you sometime soon. Is that it? Are we done?
We're done.
Good night, everybody.